Matthew McFlaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com, and welcome to a special edition of All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. Back in 2012, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Christopher Mitchell, who at the time was the director of the Marion E. Wade Center in Chicago. At the time I'm re-releasing this interview, the news of his death is merely a few days old. While I'm working to record some reflections by people who knew him, and release that as a podcast in the near future, I felt I'd go ahead and share my older interview with him now. Before Chris died, he had taken a post at Biola University in California, but when I spoke with him, he was still with the Wade Center, and thus the focus on the interview is primarily on that. The Wade Center, of course, contains books, manuscripts, letters, and other writings by and about C.S. Lewis and six other noted British authors. One final note about this conversation. When it was recorded by phone, and in listening to it again, I realized that the audio quality is not as good as I thought it had been. Well, to kick things off, give us an overview of the Wade Center, telling us why the Wade Center is a specialized library.
To begin with, it is a specialized library, special collection for the seven British authors, and Lewis certainly is prominent among them, but also those related to him as well as those who influenced him, starting with George MacDonald, G.K. Chesterton, Charles Williams, J.R.R. Tolkien, Dorothy L. Sayers, and Owen Barfield. And one of the unique features of the Wade Center is its comprehensiveness. We seek to collect not only the books and papers by them, but everything that we feel is significant that has been written about them, so that we have as well, and I'll talk a little bit more of this probably later, but doctoral dissertations, theses, all secondary sources, books, and articles about them. We also have a museum which contains memorabilia, certain furnishings related to the authors, and we also are continuing to develop programs, reading groups. I do quite a bit of speaking here and abroad. We also have a journal that we put out, an academic journal, which I'll talk about later. So we're multifaceted because of our resources. We provide photographs for publication, magazines, and the like. We have probably anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 people visit a year, and about 1,000 a year using our reading room. Been around almost 50 years. 2015 will be our 50th anniversary.
Well, now you mentioned some of this briefly. You can go into some details, a few of them, but the unique items or materials that people might be surprised to find at your place.
First, I would say some furniture items that people always find appealing. One is we actually have the desk that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings on. And after Lewis's brother died, Warren, in 1973, we picked up their dining room table, we picked up Lewis's desk and chair, and we picked up the wardrobe that their grandfather built, hand-carved, black oak. And when their father passed away, they had it shipped from their home in Belfast to their home in the Kilns. And so this thing was built sometime in the middle of the 19th century. So we have that. We picked that up on auction after Warren died. We have a collection of oral history interviews. These are interviews with people who knew our authors. And so you can read through those. Some of them are also videoed. You can actually watch them. Like I mentioned, we have all the doctoral dissertations, master's theses related to authors that we have been able to collect. We also have the C.S. Lewis family papers. Warren Lewis willed those to the Wade Center before he passed away. So with that comes 11 volumes of letters and things that Warren put together dating back to, you know, his parents and earlier, and included some of the boxing stories, imaginary land that they created as boys. Also, with that host of photographs, our article file. These are articles either by our authors or about them. them is well over 20,000 items now that become a resource. We have periodicals dating back into the 19th century dealing with MacDonald, Chesterton, right up to the present day. We keep up on all of those. We have the original map that Pauline Baynes painted for Narnia. She is the one who illustrated the Chronicles of Narnia. We also have close to 2,400 volumes of C.S. Lewis's library, and a number of those contain marginal notes by Lewis. So they're just I could go on. We have a host of things here that would keep people occupied for quite a long time.
I know when I visited last summer, while I didn't have anything in particular, I had a strong interest in the Screwtape letters, and I spent a lot of time with that, and after I left, I'm going, oh, why didn't I check this or check that? And some of the things were things that you were mentioning. Now, you mentioned about in a few years to be the 50th anniversary, but give us some of the history of the Waite Center, some of the things that have happened over the years, or some of the changes.
Right. Well, it began with Dr. Clive Kilby, who was professor of English literature here, and he had been teaching some courses related to MacDonald, Chesterton, and he came across in the 40s The Case for Christianity by C.S. Lewis, and as he said, it just revolutionized his thinking in many ways. He began to correspond with Lewis. He arranged to meet him, I think it was about 1950, early 50s, and continued that correspondence until Lewis died in 1963. After Lewis died, Dr. Kilby had an idea of a special collection with the books and papers, not only of Lewis, but he had an idea of these seven authors. He wasn't quite sure, you know, which ones would really work or not. But in 1964, the summer of 64, he went over to England, had already arranged to meet with Warren Lewis and Charles Williams' wife. He met with Dorothy Collins, who was Chesterton's secretary, and he met up with Tolkien. This was not planned, but met up with Tolkien that summer in 64, which led 2 years later for him spending an entire summer with Tolkien, working with him on the Silmarillion. So a lot happened in 64, and Kilby was trying to figure out if this was possible, a special collection. So when he came back that fall of 64, he submitted a proposal for a special collection of these seven authors, and in February of the next year, 65, it was accepted. Now the college says, you know, this is great. We don't have any money. You're going to have to find a way to do it. So it was sort of a mom and pop operation, as it were, in the beginning with Clyde and Martha Kilby. But it grew from a few letters between Lewis and Kilby and some books to where it is today, where we have the deepest collections in, for the most part, in all the authors, especially with Lewis, Dorothy Sayers, Chesterton, Owen Barfield. We have a lot. In fact, people come here even for 2 weeks, and they just are shell-shocked in terms of the depth of the collections. So that's where it got started in 1965. As I said, in 1973, after Warren Lewis died, the Lewis family papers came. That was an enormous boost to the collection. We also purchased the Sullivan collection of Chesterton material, which at the time was the largest personal collection of Chestertonian materials. Also, the Raphael Shaberman collection of MacDonald came our way during that period of time. It was in the basement of the old library, moved then to a room in Blanchard Hall, which is one of the main buildings on campus. Then from there, it moved into the old part of the Nicholas Library, and it was there until 2001. In 1999, Mary Waite, who was the daughter of Marion E. Waite, after which the collection was named in 1974, said it was time to have our own building. And so she basically funded our own freestanding building that is now on campus, and we opened our doors September 2001, and we've been here ever since. And that's the building I believe you've been in.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, just collections have been purchased or donated. We have, for example, with Dorothy Sayers, who is just amazingly prolific, we have close to 35,000 pages of just correspondence from that woman. And not to mention manuscript materials that we have. So that's just a brief history of where we're at. The collecting part of it is pretty much done. There are a few things out there, but we're moving more and more to making things more accessible and beginning to steward the collection in terms of programmatic kinds of things.
Well, now, while we encourage people to visit you at Wheaton College, you have a very good website that gives them a lot of information that we would especially encourage people to visit before coming out. But tell us about the website and some examples of what people can find there.
Right. We've been working on that in the last, probably that's been one of the big projects in the last 10 years, is the development of the website. I might also mention one of the things we're in the process of doing right now is recataloging the collection. When we got started, it was not an online computer-based. It was the old system, and when the college went to, you know, the computerized online catalog thing, we were left behind because we just simply didn't have the money. But we are now in the midst of doing that, so hopefully within another year or so, anybody anywhere in the world will be able to have access to what we have. In terms of the website, when you come on, there's a welcome area there. You can get visitor information, our hours, anytime we may be closed, our staff, a little bit of the history, which I've just shared, some material related to what you can expect in our museum, and actually a visual tour of our facility. There's an author's bio section where you can come in and basically get an overview of who these authors are. There's news and events that you can relate to. And then a large one called the Collector Collections and Services. And here, for the person who wants to visit, especially the researcher, here you get, you can online get the reading room applications to be filled out. You have a collections listing, actual reference questions, just some basic things that might be on people's minds as you begin. Just the services that we provide, and reading room guidelines, but also we have at least in the beginning, stages of what we have, so you can kind of begin to plan what you want to do and prepare your visit. So there's also a section on our Journal 7, and that relates to the 7 authors. It's called an Anglo-American Literary Review, and it's an annual publication, MLA, and we have an advisory board, both British and American, and it's both for the academic and general reader. We are now working on volume 29. It has information about subscription such. And then there's a section, as I mentioned, we don't receive funding from the college, but if someone was interested in becoming a friend of the way, there's some material there as well. So really pretty comprehensive in terms of what the information that it provides, and certainly would help somebody in preparation to know what to expect when they came here. And I would certainly say someone who wants to use the reading room, clearly encourage you to get on the web site and look through. You can, again, get the applications. You can get all the information, even potential places you could stay. There are recommendations there as well. Email addresses to get any further information.
And in fact, that's what I did. I was looking at places to stay in the area, and then I found through the website about some recommendation that was very helpful and worked out quite well. Well, now you've spoken personally or written on a wide range of topics related to the authors on the Wade Center, but one in particular regarding C.S. Lewis I'd like you to take a moment to share about is a 4-part video guide on Mere Christianity. Can you tell us some about that?
Yes, we're in partnership with a number of other organizations that do similar sorts of things. One is the C.S. Lewis Institute in Washington, D.C. It's not a collection like ours, but they are basically seeking to engage culture, especially the D.C. culture, with Christianity, and similar to the way some of our authors did. And they came up with the idea of producing some video guides for some of the more significant books on C.S. Lewis. The first one was Mere Christianity. Jerry Root has done one on Screwtape Letters, and Marjorie Mead, who is the associate director here, has recently done one on Letters to Malcolm. Now, the Mere Christianity, basically what that is just walking people through the basic argument and content of the book. And for that, what I did, which was really quite a helpful exercise. Took a while, but I reduced the entire book to about 35 pages. I sought to try to bring out the essence of his argument. Now someone else might do it in a different way. But the four-part video is basically me taking an audience through Mere Christianity and at certain points applying it certain specific ways.
And we'll provide a link in the show notes to that video, as well as a direct link to the Waite Center,
yes,
so people can avail themselves to that. I want to go to some more general questions. First, regarding C.S. Lewis and your encounter with him, if you could narrow down to maybe two or three books by Lewis that have meant the most to you, what would they be?
You know, as I anticipated that question, it's very difficult because it has shifted throughout the years, depending on what's been going on. Right now, I can say that the last part of Mere Christianity, book four, and especially those last about five or six chapters, have become really significant. And since doing that video guide for Mere Christianity, I've spent quite a bit of time there. But over the years, I mean, certainly the Chronicles of Narnia in different ways, but I would have to say his a number of his essays have been extremely important. His sermons, particularly The Weight of Glory, The Abolition of Man, and The Great Divorce, have also at various points been extremely helpful. And I have always enjoyed, and from the time I read it years ago, has been one of my favorites, is the Space Trilogy that he put together. So it's difficult to say, to narrow it down, and I'm sure I've forgotten something that I will later think, oh no, I should have mentioned that.
Right. Well, Lewis has written in such a wide range of topics.
That's
or
right.
Styles that, you know, there's so much there. Well, even like taking Mere Christianity, for example, what you said made me remember that people don't often realize, although if you look at the table of contents, it was first released as three separate books, the first one in two parts, but you can even just read the last, you know, book as a kind of a standalone because it's got so much good information. In fact, people who maybe don't necessarily need the logical arguments in defense of a creator, it's like, well, I've been there, understand, I don't need that, they should maybe just jump to that book four to get some practical information.
Right. Right. And in book three as well, he does, in just a few pages, does a very fine job of addressing a host of topics related to the Christian life. And those, again, some I found more helpful than others, but they're all well thought through.
You've had the privilege, as is quite obvious with your position, to have access to every book related to Lewis that published. While I'm sure maybe you haven't read through all of them, is it possible to highlight a few that you found yourself recommending to others the most over the year?
The one I'm actually happy to be able to plug one book. Unfortunately, it's out of print, but it's one of the earliest works on Lewis, and it's by Paul Holmer. It's called C.S. Lewis, The Shape of His Faith and Thought, and I still believe it's one of the more intelligent books on Lewis. Paul Holmer was from Yale University. In terms of biographies, the two I typically recommend are George Sayers' Jack. George Sayers was a friend of Lewis's, and the Hooper Green. Those two biographies are typically the ones that I'll recommend in terms of getting them, you know, into his life. The other two, in terms of kind of getting different perspectives on Lewis, Light on C.S. Lewis and At the Breakfast Table, which is now, I think, Remembering C.S. Lewis, edited by Jim Como. And what you have there are people who knew Lewis sort of reflecting on him in various ways. And so those are sort of usually the first places that I recommend people to go to. And then if they want particular studies on areas, there are a host of people who have done just very, very fine work. David Downing has put out a series of books, Bruce Edwards, Peter Skonkel, Michael Ward's Planet Narnia. And let me just say, you know, he has a particular argument about the planets behind the seven books, but the book also has just a chock full of some really good things on Lewis. And so even if one doesn't necessarily accept his thesis, the book is worth reading. So, and the other one I might throw out is if someone is concerned about the issues of suffering, the problem of evil, and Lewis's take on it, Jerry Root has put out a very fine work on that as well. But there are literary sides. Doris Meyer's C.S. Lewis in Context. I mean, there are a host of things that it just depends on their interest. But I usually tell them to go first to, like, the biographies and then people who knew Lois talking about them.
Well, we've covered quite a bit. We appreciate your time. This has been Dr. Christopher Mitchell. He's the director of the Marion E. Waite Center. We skipped over some questions that I mentioned to you off air here, but either with that or any other final thoughts before we end?
The one, and it just relates to one of the questions we skipped over, Lewis's appeal. The one thing I will just say was an observation made by D. Martin Lloyd Jones's daughter, Lady Catherwood, who said that one of the things Lewis did so well is he taught us how to think through a thing. And I would say that that is probably one of the great legacies of Lewis, that as you're working through his writings, he's not just telling you something, he's actually helping you think through a thing. I've always tucked that away. I think she nailed something there.
Well, again, we encourage people, the link is on the website here, but if you go to wheaton.edu/Waite Center, you can get to that, as well as there's a good welcome and very good information before planning to visit, as well as just to, if a person doesn't get a chance to visit the area there, just outside of Chicago, for those who aren't familiar with where it's at. Well, again, Dr. Mitchell, we thank you for your time.
Yes, it's been a pleasure.
Finally, let me remind you that I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com, and this has been a repeat podcast featuring Dr. Chris Mitchell, who recently passed away. This interview was recorded in 2012 before he left to teach at Biola University in 2013. Don't forget to check the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com for links mentioned in the show. These include the videos Chris had done on Mere Christianity. They are now available for free online. Also, unless you are listening to this at least weeks later after I've released this podcast show, be sure to check back for another show that I will be recording with some friends of Dr. Mitchell reflecting on his life. Finally, don't forget to check out my past interviews that include a visit with Dr. Kevin Radiker. He portrays Lewis on the stage. I also did a chat with the author of the C.S. Lewis Phenomena, and then there's also my own talk on quotes falsely attributed to Lewis. These are all new releases for 2014. That's EssentialCSLewis.com, a feature partner site on the Middle Earth Network.